Hello and welcome to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast that was once about Seinfeld, but no longer. It is the podcast where we discuss stuff about the classical world-ish. I'm Marlo Edwards. I'm joined as ever by my co-host Phoebe Roy.
Hello.
There is no esteemed Dr. Wyman this week due to scheduling issues. Don't worry, Dr. Wyman will return. He has not been hunted for sport by his enemies.
No. Not on this occasion.
You wouldn't want to be going after Patrick Wyman.
No. He's massive. What if he were to, you know, blow you down?
Yeah.
Yeah. He'll return as Pat Wyman the White next week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
That's right, isn't it? He shows
yeah,
up.
I believe so.
Gandalf the White.
The thing is, we've both had too much sex to know that much about Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm. Well, they made films out of them. Films
they
are
did,
okay.
They did, but I've only seen the films once under duress.
Under duress? What kind of duress?
Oh, it's like one of those ones that
it's
like
peer
people
pressure.
when people
kind
find
of
out
cornering you, just like that. If you're cool, you'll watch Lord of the Rings.
People
what,
are just
scared?
People just
you're scared,
get,
are you?
They get really upset with you when you've not seen Lord of the Rings. Like, I've had this many times. Like, I was eventually sort of like made to watch them when I was about 25, and yeah, you're right. They're fine. I mean, they are overlong, and
yeah,
I do feel like this is my hot Lord of the Rings take. It's not necessarily what you're here for as a listener, but you know what, you're listening, so you may as well have it. Don't care for the Hobbits. I think the Hobbits ruin what could otherwise be a half decent film. And I know that's sort of controversial because the whole film really revolves around the Hobbits, but this kind of ridiculous fucking, you know, like, oh, Mr. Frodo, we've got you. Oh, what are you doing now? We've got, it's like, fuck off. What is this fucking Seven White and the Snow? Seven White and the Snow Dwarves was what I was about to say.
Yep. Seven White and the Snow Dwarves. Yep. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Marlon, you're doing so well. You're on a roll here, yeah. Babe. Keep
I love
going.
The Snow
keep
Dwarves.
Love the Snow Dwarves.
Yeah. And any kind of thick covering of snow would be a nightmare for dwarves.
All right, I'm not gonna address that. I think we're just gonna move on.
What were you gonna say?
You know what? It doesn't matter. It absolutely doesn't matter. I don't have any particular view about the Hobbits. They got their little furry feet. Look, all right. This is my opinion.
Yeah, I don't like that either. That's like sort of foot porn coded. It's pervert coded.
Here is my boiling hot Lord of the Rings take.
All right.
All of the fellows in Lord of the Rings, they're not ideal in all sorts of different ways. Like imagine spending even like a second in the company of the elves, you know, or making their kind of gnomic pronouncements, and they want to live forever, and they go, oh, you know, you saw death, but there is also life. It's like, oh, fuck it, shut up. Point is, have a fucking day off.
Yeah. The elves have a kind
have
of Gen X.
Have a pint
quality.
And chill out.
Yeah. Where they're like, oh yeah, millennials think it was different in their day. Well, when I grew up, you used to get run over every day by a leaded petrol car in the street, and we turned out all right.
Is that what the elves say?
Yeah, because they're constantly reminiscing about stuff from lifetimes ago, you know.
They do like...
Oh, do you remember that house party 4,000 years ago? And the other elves are like, yeah, I do. Yeah.
I don't mind the orcs. I think they're all right. I think they're misunderstood.
Yeah, they're men of simple pleasures.
I think that it is anti-Cockney propaganda, the Lord of the Rings, because the orcs are all born in the sound of bow bells. Which makes it very, very complicated to transfer them to Middle Earth. That's why they have trouble, you know, getting them all marching down to the big fort. It's because they're stuck on the central line. It's been quite a long day. I think just yeah. You know what?
What is I'm just the rhyming slang for maggoty bread?
I'm just gonna leave that. That's what happens. You go to Liverpool Street on a Friday night, and it's just full of orcs.
Oh yeah, they're in Box
come
Park.
They've all come down. They've all got the train down from Essex to go to Fabric.
Mm.
Looks like Coke's back on the menu, boys.
Those are the, that's the snow dwarves. That's where the snow dwarves.
Yeah.
Figure. Yeah,
exactly.
All right. So we've been watching Those About to Die.
We have, for our considerable sins.
For our considerable sins. We're on episode 4.
Yeah. And I have to say, it's the worst episode yet.
It's a howler. It's a howler, boys.
It's a shame.
Howling is back on the menu.
Yeah, it's a shame that the esteemed Dr. Wyman isn't here to discuss this, because I feel as though this one had what I would wager are the most historical inaccuracies of any episode we've seen so far. But I don't have the level of detailed knowledge to specifically debunk. Like, because throughout the episode, Annabelle kept asking me, like, is that true? Did they really do that? And then some of the things were so perplexing that I didn't even really know how to begin an answer. And I was like, look, the short version of the answer is no, but I'm not even sure where they're getting this from.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? We have an interesting change in tone as well. So we don't see any gladiators. It's like watching a soap. The gladiators have been sent off on holiday. The gladiators are all on maternity leave.
Mm.
So we're now watching the other storylines.
We're back to zero gladiating. We briefly ticked up to one gladiating last episode.
And we were getting so overexcited about the one gladiatorial show.
Finally they took that phone call from Ridley Scott. He was like, guys, you've got to put some gladiating in this.
Gotta put some fucking gladiators. So this is here are my notes.
Yeah.
You can't call your show Those About to Die and not put any fucking gladiators in it. People know the expression. Honestly, lads, it's false advertising at this point.
You're saying Those About to Die. We're 4 episodes in. No one's fucking died. How about 2 is it? You know, what are we talking?
So yeah, we've kind of moved in sort of tone and signifier to sort of teen movie lunchroom taxonomy. So there's like a bit where they're like, who are they? Ah, those are the Vestal Virgins, like in the kind of the background, like you have fucking Missy Elliott playing. And the Vestal Virgins are all like coming out and they're like, the Vestal Virgins are super hot and they have special powers. And we have some really, really fun, like kind of ultra kind of Nuremberg style banners.
Get your clock on. Yeah. A Missy Elliott classic.
Yeah. So we have the Nuremberg style banners and some sort of big gold eagles, which all look like kind of Hun House decor.
It's quite fun, isn't it, how the Nazis were imitating the Romans to an extent, and this has now been backformed in the minds of the producers of Those About to Die, such that now the Roman world is imitating the Nazis
in a way
that you might say is quite anachronistic.
It's a little bit like, what is meant to be going on here? So we have
extremely Matthew McConaughey and True Detective voice. Time is a flat circle. Everything that's ever been done or will be done. You see that the Romans are imitating the Nazis.
They're the keeper of the sacred fire of Rome. What's the sacred fire of Rome? No, we're not going to explain that. It just non-specific sacred fire. Again, could have been an interesting way into. Talk about some, you know, kind of famous Vestal Virgins. We have a kind of fun roll call of foreign queens towards the end. Where are the Vestal Virgins? Yeah, there should be like a kind of like the thing at the end of The Irishman, like this Vestal Virgin, you know, died at 80 of a heart attack.
Yeah. You know her now as Kelly on Hollyoaks, but actually she started out as a Vestal Virgin.
This one
in a
died
childhood in a role.
This one died in a prison riot. Okay. All right. Should we go through the plot?
Such as it is.
Okay. So we open with the riots. The riots have happened because there's the grain is delayed getting into Rome. And also because people are super, super pissed off about the addition of the fifth faction. They're really wanting to make this faction stuff happen. I quite like that the nobles are all wearing the colours of their faction, which makes it look a little bit like Sports Day.
Yeah.
They've got their house colours on. Like, there's one that's got, it's blue.
So we've
got
wearing my blue faction scarf as I make my way down for the Boxing Day chariot race.
Yeah, have you seen the fucking spring summer blue faction kit? It's horrible. It looks like it was designed on MS Paint. It's ever since Adidas took over.
Well, yeah, and you know, of course, one of the well-known town crier news outlets did famously try and smear members of the Red Faction as responsible for the tragedy at Hillsborough, when in fact it was mostly caused by the Vigiles.
Good grief. So the gold faction have their racing rights withdrawn. Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Yeah, we get a great scene where he comes and takes the chariots back, the guy from the white faction. He just scrapes off a bit of the gold paint and it's white underneath. And he's like, oh, looks like these used to belong to the white faction. And it's like, or alternatively, you have to paint something white before you paint it gold. Like, it's the dumbest.
Somebody does not understand the principles of gilding.
Yeah. It's called primer. You paint it on before you paint on a colour. I would have loved Tenax to do some barrack room lawyering here.
I was going to say, someone was not listening in his art and architecture modules.
It's called a base coat, mate.
It's called a base coat. I have a line quote here. I now can't remember who said it. I assume it was Tenax, who says, I didn't actually pay for them, but I did think about it, which I think is quite kind of Captain Jack Sparrow. So they're still not 100% clear in what the fuck we're meant to make of Tenax. Is he a kind of charming rogue? Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? I don't get it. It's completely unclear. Every single time he appears, he is showing up near someone who has kind of more power than him and saying, I think we could work together. You know, DM me. I love your pics. DM me for a collab.
Yeah, let's collab.
Yeah, let's collab. Yeah, love your pictures. Submit them.
I would love to share your carousel of photos on my page, rome.story.
Yeah, so it's sort of like he's doing the kind of I'll tell you who's really pulling the strings here. It's like, yeah, it's not you, is it, mate? It's not you. It's not you, Tenax. Also, I've now spotted that Tenax is a rearrangement of Texan, and that bothers me.
Oh no! I think they're doing it. Well, the Romans were the first Texans, really.
Yeah. Do you want to elaborate?
Time is a flat circle. Chariot's kind of like a pickup truck if you think about it like that.
This is an interesting McConaughey.
Yeah, it did feel like it was drifting a bit there.
You're getting a little bit Sam Elliott there.
We're drifting a little bit towards McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. All right, all right, all right. The McConaughey in True Detective is more intentional. Well, the thing is,
that still sounds like Sam Elliott to me.
Sam Elliott, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Sam Elliott is in that ballpark also.
Yeah, in ancient Rome, they had a guy called Dudas.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I wish we'd had Woody Harrelson from True Detective in this episode to grab Domitian and go, I want you to stop saying odd shit.
He does say odd shit. We will come on to Domitian and his odd shit.
The chariots, they confiscate the chariots. And then Scorpus is like, I'm out. I'm Scorpus and I'm leaving. For some reason, even though I'm ancient Rome, I'm a modern Italian and I'm also a very camp. My name is Gino da Campo Scorpus. It's a different recipe. It's a completely different culinary cuisine. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Scorpus at all times acts like Gino DeCampo talking to Holly Willoughby.
I gotta be honest with you. I don't know who that is.
Oh, so Gino DeCampo is an Italian chef who's like, he lives in the UK and he's basically like a Hunfluencer. Like,
right.
He's sort of famous for no reason. He's like a sort of mediocre chef. And then he somehow got on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And he became like massive with the Huns because he's like the campest straight man who ever lived. And then he just gets very like Italianly outraged by things. And there's a really famous clip of him on This Morning with Phil and Holly, and they're talking about what is it? It's like I can't remember. It's some kind of dish, right? And then she goes, "Oh, it's kind of like a British carbonara," and he goes, "No, if my grandmother had wheels, she would be a bike." And then, like, Philip Schofield at this point is losing it.
I'm familiar with "If my grandma had wheels, she'd be a bike," which I got to tell you has never struck me as particularly good analysis.
No. "If my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a kind of horrifying steampunk creation."
Yeah, she wouldn't be a bike. You'd need a bunch of other stuff before you could reasonably call your grandmother a bike. If your grandmother had wheels, she would just be a wheeled grandmother.
Yeah.
She would be probably easier to move about. She'd be more portable.
Yeah, well, unless stairs are involved.
Yeah, but presumably we're talking about the kind of wheels that you can kind of lock and click. She'd still be able to use her feet. They wouldn't have replaced her feet with wheels.
"If my grandmother had wheels, she'd be like a Cockney version of one of those robot waiters you get in some Japanese restaurant."
Yeah.
Yeah.
She'd be a
Roomba. That's more accurate. But it doesn't sound as funny in Gino DeCampo's voice. "If my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a Cockney version of the robot waiters you get in some Japanese restaurants. Not all, I hasten to add. It's a bit of a gimmick, if I'm honest."
So this is who you are saying is like, what's he called? Scorpus.
Yeah. And Scorpus, he keeps talking about himself in the third person.
I
cannot stress this enough, reader, listener, viewer. If you haven't been watching this show, and you're imagining how much Scorpus talks about himself in the third person, you're not imagining it enough. Okay,
yeah,
how much you're thinking?
Yeah, wrong. It's more than that. He does it all the time. And
it's fully the Mitchell and Webb Caesar sketch, like all the way through.
In such a way that it makes me think that they got to this point in the writing and someone said, "Are you sure it's clear who Scorpus is when they're talking about him? Because I'm not sure it's clear. I think we need to make it a little bit clearer."
He's Bagpuss's sidekick.
I beg your pardon.
Scorpus.
Scorpus is Bagpuss's sidekick.
Yeah, yeah. You got Bagpuss, Scorpus, Sourpuss.
Oh, fucking! I thought there was a character in Bagpuss called Scorpus, but no.
Here, Scorpusy galore, and she's a Bond girl who always talks about herself in the third person.
Mm-hmm.
"Well, Mr. Bond, I think a Scorpusy could be seeing you later."
So where's the score coming in? Is she keeping the score? The body keeps the Scorpus. How's that?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. She's actually a cricket umpire in her spare time.
Yeah. I think we've wrung everything we can possibly.
So Scorpus quits the gold faction for no reason.
Yeah, for literally no reason. And then there's a really weird bit where Marsus and the MILF, which is a really, really unsuccessful children's book series.
It feels like a 90s cartoon, Marsus and the MILF.
What, like Pinky in the Brain? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. Well, actually, no. Better yet, Morning Zoo radio show. You're listening to Martha's and the MILF. Toilet flushing sound effect.
It's drive time. And what does the MILF say? The MILF says, ooh.
Yeah.
Rawr.
Cougar sound effect.
and then Marcus is sort of tasked with kind of delivering a very kind of somber piece of news.
Yeah.
In the kind of the sort of backdrop of a kind of package of sound effects.
Her Royal Highness Queen Elizabeth II has died.
we interrupt this broadcast. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah. Glass breaking sound effect. It's the original MILF, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. Has passed away at Balmoral.
Yeah. So there's a weird bit where she shags her husband in front of Scorpus.
Yeah, she's like wanking him off while telling Scorpus that she's not going to hire him back.
Yeah.
At the Blue Faction.
At the Blue Faction.
It's very weird. It's sort of like she's going like, see, I can fuck my husband. I usually choose not to, but now I tell you what, I'm going to fuck him just to spite you. How do you like that? And Scorpus is like, Scorpus. Scorpus does not like.
Oh no, poor sad Scorpus. So it's a bit more of a sexy episode, this one.
Tell you what, for a guy whose name is Score Puss, he doesn't really do it.
Yeah,
in
he's
this
not
episode.
Really scoring that much puss, is he?
Do you reckon that's how he came up with the name?
I can only hope so. So we've got this. All right. So I'm sure I've told you about my Western culture theory of the erotic. Either on screen, mainly on screen, but like on the screen or on the page, right? Yeah, Scorpus through the ages. Listeners, if you are, as you certainly should be, if you're a subscriber to my Substack, you'll be familiar with this taxonomy. But I will push on with an explanation regardless. All right, so you have four categories of the erotic in Western culture. You've got British, you've got American. You got French and you got German. Ooh. Right?
German's a horrifying quadrant to be in.
It is a horrifying quadrant to be in. And like, of course, you might say, yeah, but like there are all kinds of cultural traditions which are technically, you know, under the kind of umbrella of Western culture, which you're not mentioning here. Yeah, that's true. That's of course true, but they all fall into one of these four national categories. I mean, don't take it up with me. This is just the way things are.
Yeah, look, if you're trying to draw a distinction between German and Austrian erotic, what are you doing with your time? it's wasted academic work.
So what we've got here, yeah, it's not a good use of the brain God gave you, is it? To be splitting hairs on the difference between French and Spanish. For example, I'm not saying that Spanish necessarily falls under the French.
Yeah, I mean, certainly saying Napoleon attempted at one time or another.
So this is a mixture, I would say, of British and American.
Okay.
So the American mode is the kind of specific prudery only occasioned by lots and lots of porn consumption.
Right.
So it hates the idea of sex, but is very interested in the concept.
Okay.
British is all about naked bums.
Yeah. We're a bawdy people.
We're a bawdy people. We're very, very interested in the naked bum. The Americans are less interested in the naked bum. We don't really have naked bums in the American mode.
Past the network.
But we do in the British mode. So we have some naked bums. We also have, we have Domitian supervising a threesome, and you are
Sort of observing a twink orgy, like a director or a health and safety supervisor.
Yeah. He's seeing if their twinks are up to code. He's assessing the strength of the load bearing twinks.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I'm just shadowing today.
Yeah. Oh no. Don't,
it's actually my first day as a twink.
Don't even look at me. I'm not even here. He's got his twink hard hat on because that's the regulation. Yeah. But he's not actually allowed to speak to the twinks.
It's an Ofsted inspection where the O stands for orgy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the twink ombudsman. He's the trainee twink ombudsman.
He's the ombuds boy.
He's the ombuds boy. He's been sent along. He's got his tutor there with him to make sure that he's asking the right questions.
Yeah.
And it's completely puzzling what the purpose is. And this is what makes it a bit American, because it's completely gratuitous. It's not part of the story. It's just there. And
so many of the scenes with Domitian are just like, he's gay, by the way. In case you forgot, he's gay.
Well, there's a bit where he's doing archery, and this is the ancient sport of gay archery that he's doing. I don't know why that's there. It's so specifically gay archery. Because not only is the whole point of Domitian in this show is that he is gay, but that, and this is quite surprising, given alleged progress both socially and culturally, because the moral is he's gay and that's bad. It's bad that he's gay.
Yeah,
they're really going for the it's a super bad thing that Domitian is gay. And
it's an interesting take, isn't it?
It's an interesting take. And considering the equally puzzling desire to rehabilitate the figure of Titus, which is completely unnecessary to do, by the way, because they're not particularly interested in accuracy. So why they so love Titus, who's a first-class Burke, is Titus in this. But for some reason, I think we're expected to think of him as a sort of relatively kind of decent and honest man who wants to be a good emperor. Certainly he is a devoted son. And there's another little bit where you just think this is almost research, but it's not quite research. So I don't know what it's doing. I don't know what point they're trying to make. Which is that he is saying that he is suggesting to this kind of group of non-specific nobles who do seem to have, I mean, they seem to have come around to talk about the riots and the chariot racing factions, but he seems sort of quite keen to have them sort of keep them around for a kind of mother's meeting. So they have a kind of coffee morning. And he's like, let me just run some stuff by you. And he says there have only been three deifications in Rome. And that's been Caesar, that's been Augustus, and that's been Claudius.
And he's like, let's turn the big three into a big four.
Yeah.
What about?
How about it?
We're going to get a fourth Champions League spot, and we're going to reward it to our man, Vespasian.
You know what? This is going to be third and fourth place play each other. How about that? That'll be nice.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. He's going to have to play against FC Napoli for the spot in the Pantheon.
Yeah, exactly. In the Circus Maximus.
Yeah.
So the reason for this is, like, first of all, that, and something which they're really not kind of pressing home to the audience at all, is that there haven't been that many emperors before now. They just haven't. It's this is in the towards the end of the first century. It's towards the end of the first century AD. So there's only formally been emperors. I mean, depending on when you date it from. Personally, I date it to 27 BC. I date it to the time of Augustus's first settlement. Different people might use different dates. They're wrong. So there's, so it's been just over a century of emperors. And at least a couple of these emperors were in charge for really quite a long time. Tiberius was in charge for quite a long time. Augustus was in charge for quite a long time. And Tiberius, Nero, Caligula, and the four emperors, Galba, Vitellius, Otto. They all died very ignominiously. So it wasn't a case of apotheosis was deemed to be a kind of special reward and special recognition only afforded to the to these two emperors, because they were the only ones who didn't either die with few to mourn, shall we say, or were murdered in some manner of coup. So again, it's the sort of thing that it feels like they're trying to kind of make a kind of historical point with it, but the historical point is just is both irrelevant and incorrect. And while we're on it, the framing of Domitian as a sort of sub Caligula is very, very irritating. It's really
Caligula himself was more of a switch.
Yes, famously more of a switch. It's really irritating. I find it really irritating because bearing in mind that they haven't bothered to really make it a kind of proper kind of historical drama. If you wanted to make it about Caligula, why not simply make it about Caligula? Why?
A great question.
Bearing in mind that they're not. I mean, I assume that there's going to be the eruption. I presume that's going to happen. And I have to say, I was a little bit disappointed that they called the Colosseum the Flavian Amphitheatre, because that is correct. And I was really, really looking forward to saying, like, it's called they wouldn't have called it the Colosseum, then they would have called it the Flavian Amphitheatre. So not only am I annoyed at this show, but I'm annoyed that it has robbed me of the chance.
One
to,
point on the board.
The chance to be. The chance to be pedantic about it. So yeah, what's going on in this episode?
Yeah, it's pretty baffling, because I think also they kind of portray the deification of the emperor as like some kind of like properly religious process that like as in the sort of the way that it's presented in the show is like, look, right now Vespasian is up in you know the Elysian fields, and he's in a sort of holding pattern waiting to find out if he's going to become a god.
Oh,
on the basis of a bunch of paperwork,
like purgatory. No, not like fucking purgatory, not like that, like something similar to purgatory. They've made it sound like it is a question of religious bureaucracy, as opposed to just that's something that could, you know, be sort of treated a bit as functionally a political matter rather than a religious one.
Yeah, because it's like that's why, and that's also then would explain why a lot of the other emperors weren't made gods. It was because the people who took power after them didn't like them and were keen to like rebrand the whole business.
Yeah. We're dropping that. Yeah, they're like a kind of sort of semi scam charity. They change their name every couple of years. Then maybe it'll be quite hard to track them through company's house.
Yeah, I mean it's less that like Nero died and they were like, yeah, pretty good emperor, but maybe not god worthy. It's more that like Nero was Trotsky, he got fucking ice picked, and then you know Stalin was like, what, Nero who?
making
someone a god was not that crazy. It was just that, you know, didn't happen that often due to the level of political upheavals, coups, so on and so forth.
Yeah. I always forget that Claudius was as well, though. But again, this would be an interesting way in to having some like aspect of of Roman life.
Yeah.
Without just making it feel actually, like Brookside in a toga.
Now that's something I'd watch.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what? As soon as I said it, I was like, I'd watch that. I'd happily watch that.
The Brookside Vestal Virgins in a very special Juicy Couture tracksuit. So there's a little bit more Scorpus, which he eventually goes and gets a job driving for the White Faction, who bargain him down to 600,000 sesterces on the basis that no one else is interested.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a funny bit here where the guy who owns the White Faction says, no, I'm not giving you 1.8 million, even though that's what they're paying Zenon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you 600,000 and that's the final offer. And then he goes, but if it makes you feel better, we can tell everyone that it's 1.8. And he's like, scored balls. And I'm like, this joke in the script, it doesn't make any sense, because that is a joke that fucking happens between Ten Axe and Consul Penry Jones.
Yeah.
In the previous episode where he's
Masters
like,
in the Milk,
okay,
yeah.
Well, I want 1.8 million
of drive time with Masters in the Milk.
It's not even about the salary of Zenon. It's about fucking the buying the shares in the faction. Because he says, well, I want 800,000. And then the guy says, okay, but we'll say that it was whatever, 500. And then Ten Axe is like, fine. So the guy from the White Faction is referencing like a conversation had by Ten Axe and Consul Penry Jones that he is not privy to and could not possibly know about for the benefit of the viewer. Much like Rome is imitating the Nazis, also for the benefit of the viewer, but in a way that people at the time could not possibly have been privy to.
Yeah. Are we sure it's that? Or is it that they forgot that they already used this joke and just wrote it again?
Possibly. Either way.
Either way. We have another, speaking of the Blue Faction, we have another subplot which I genuinely found baffling. And was...
You went very Jeff Stelling on transfer deadline day there. Speaking of the Blue Faction.
On the Blue Faction.
Another bit of plot is coming in, Chris. But for who?
I'm hearing news. I'm hearing that we're just going to give it to Big Sam for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And you know what?
That's what the Gold Faction should do.
I know I've made that joke before and I don't care. Because I'll tell you what. Right. I'll tell you this for nothing, listener. I'm going to make that joke every episode.
Yeah.
Because give it to Big Sam for the rest of the season is my favourite joke.
Tell you what, and if you don't like Phoebe making that joke, around about episode 6, we'll give it to Big Sam for the rest of the season. Sam Allardyce replacing all three hosts on the podcast and just doing a dour rundown of events in Those About to Die.
We're not going to let him watch the first 6 episodes. He's going to have to start from episode 7 and try and work out what's going on.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so we've got this very puzzling subplot, which I assume is something that happened that is based on something. This is what I mean about it being like a soap opera. Like, you're sort of watching it and you're going like, well, who the fuck is that? I've not seen that person before.
Yeah.
So the young...
This is such a confusing episode.
So confusing. And it's just turn the fucking light up. Light a candle.
Oh, so fucking dark.
Honestly, at points
I thought I'd gone blind. I was like, what is going on in this scene?
Genuinely. Like, if you're doing chiaroscuro, you've got to have a little bit of the chiaro.
Yeah. It was like live footage from inside the Trojan horse. Like, what?
Yeah.
I can't see.
Yeah, it's like being in a shared house and like every single one of the light bulbs has gone apart from one light bulb and everyone is playing chicken about who's gonna fix it.
Yeah. So I actually do have a slight theory about this.
Mm-hmm. About why it's so dark.
Well, no, but more about like why the plot is fucked, but also potentially about why it's so dark.
Can I say the thing that confused me before you say why the plot is fucked? So in the first episode, there's a kind of non-specific piece of shit who I confused with Masters in the MILF because he looks loads like him. He's a non-specific piece of shit And he has stolen his wife's shares in the Blue Faction, which have turned out to be worth a lot of money for some reason.
Yeah, great faction.
Great faction. It's blue. Who doesn't like blue? It's a, you know, it's a neutral.
Everyone likes blue.
So she has lost her shares, and there's a kind of there's a lesbian MILF, a LaMILF.
Yeah.
Who says,
yeah, the mysterious lesbian MILF.
Mysterious lesbian MILF. A rare beast, the lesser spotted lesbian MILF. I mean,
it's,
you know,
also just a MILF, but it stands for man, I'm a lesbian for sure.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, none of these dames are Attia of the Julii, are they? They just aren't.
No.
They simply aren't. So she shows up and says, "I will help you get your shares back, and then you and I are gonna kiss with tongues," and
French erotic.
I was gonna say, this is straying away from the British and the Americans, straying into the French, and which, quite frankly, one does not want to see at any time of the day. But it's completely baffling as a subplot. As is the what's the name of the woman whose children have all been taken into slavery? What's she called?
Oh God, I have to confess, I don't know.
Fucking Lisa Bonet. What's her name?
Probably the reason why I don't know her name is I care so little about any of the characters in this show. I honestly find it quite,
and also because of your racist views.
Obviously, yeah. Obviously. But I mean, that is actually, that those are unusually taking second place.
just to be clear, it's not Lisa Bonet, as far as I can tell. She just looks
Carla.
Like her.
That's
Carla. Her Carla, that's what, and isn't her, one of her kids called Lala or something?
No, her daughters are called Aura and Jula.
Jula. There we go. Yeah. Jula's a good name. Young Jula.
Yeah.
So yeah, so there's a puzzling subplot about the fact that she apparently is a polyglot, which I'm assuming is going to come up at some point in the future. But again, it really might not. But she,
yeah, because this bit is like she's a poor woman from Numidia, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why the fuck would she speak like Gaul or what? Like it actually genuinely doesn't make sense. It's not like,
yeah, it doesn't make sense at all.
It's not like working class people can learn languages, actually. It's like, no, physically, how would she have got that information? She would never have met a Gaul. Like how?
Yeah. Well, this is when she's also the one who goes around barking ethnicities at people, which I still maintain that she just asks everyone if they're Syrian, and it just so happens that just on this one occasion she got it right. I genuinely think that's what we're dealing with here.
Yeah,
but she gets
Syrian.
She gets told that the Vestal Virgins can free a slave with one touch. Ooh, and so you can see her being like, "I wonder if I can get a Vestal Virgin to touch my kids." Yeah.
This seems like a crazy plot line.
The problem is that's all very well, but presumably this would have to take place in front of like formal witnesses, because otherwise surely anyone would just say, "Oh yeah, no, Vestal Virgin touched me. She did. Yeah,
she wanked me off, actually."
She did. You don't know her. She goes to a different school.
She goes to a different convent.
She goes to a different convent. Okay, so this business about the Vestal Virgins can free slaves or free prisoners, it's actually more likely that it was that they were allowed to intervene when someone had been imprisoned, and they were able to free prisons in that way. There wasn't some kind of sort of magic.
We're giving a Snopes score of mixed here.
Sort of magic touch, but okay. So I was actually quite interested, because I was like, this feels like the sort of thing that if they'd made it up for the show, then sort of fine, because it's sort of quite inventive, and it's a fun way of actually inserting some legitimate Roman cultic practice in there.
Yeah.
So where did they get this from? I can tell you. I'll tell you where they got it from.
Okay.
Fucking Suetonius, isn't it? I got it from fucking Suetonius.
Suetonius.
Oh, it also comes up in Dionysius of Halicarnassus. But like, I think you can probably just wholesale reject Greek sources in terms of like precision about kind of all the structure of Roman society. I think like I'm happy not reject them entirely, but certainly looking at them with a little bit of an eye. But like Suetonius is your fucking auntie who never fully listens to anybody else. She only listens to sort of half what people say and then kind of sort of tunes into the end of a sentence. So she's constantly passing on like semi-accurate and over-dramatized information.
Yeah, when like Suetonius as a source is a bit like if in 2000 years they were using, you know, headlines from the News of the World circa about 2005 as a source of what was actually going on, and possibly headlines from the Sunday Sport. Like, it's not a great sign when you're relying too heavily on Suetonius.
No, but also, where do you think they got it from? They weren't sitting. They surely did not sit down with Suetonius.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, well, they could be getting it via a secondary source on Suet, or like potentially through one of their little historical advisors.
One of the little historical advisors. Another thing I had some trouble with. So we have Domitian, who at this point is just a kind of mad cackling villain. There's absolutely no interest whatsoever in presenting any kind of nuance of character.
Let's do Domitian in one sec. So I have a theory about why the plot is fucked.
Let's hear the theory.
Every episode so far has been directed by Roland Emmerich and written by Robert Rodat, who are like the showrunners. This episode, however, was directed by a man, and name alert here, Marco Kreutzpainter. He's German, so draw your own conclusions. And was written by Charles Holland. So basically, what happened is they got some temps in this week.
I see.
I'm recording some
stings for Masters in the Mill there.
I just suddenly had a moment. I don't think the timings would line up, but I was like, oh, what if this was a writer's strike thing?
Ooh.
And they had to bring in some fucking Europeans.
So Kreutzpainter is a scab, among other things.
Although actually I'm seeing that Roland Emmerich is actually German, but he works so much in Hollywood, he might potentially be a SAG or a WGA. Robert Rodat is American, so interesting. Either way, the plot, such as it was as of episode 3, has absolutely collapsed into nothingness. Of which this is a great, Domitian is a great example. I mean, in the Wikipedia summary, it just says Domitian has a male lover. And it's like, yeah, as he has done for the last 3 episodes.
Yeah. But says to him, a human being wrote these words, says to him, I'm more than just a mouth and an ass.
Yeah.
Which is a hell of a thing.
Try telling that to the scientist from the Human Centipede. he's got a very specific view.
I don't want us to get too derailed here, but would you call him a scientist? Because I feel like his methodology leaves something to be desired.
Well, I think it's
scientist, you know, a protected
the aims
category.
Are questionable. Well, like it has to come from the science region of Cambridge.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise
you're just a sparkling nut.
Vivisection. I mean, I think the scientist
again, it's
in
not vivisection,
in the,
really, is it?
In it's, the human. Well,
if anything, it's vivi addition. He's not cutting people open; he's adding them together.
Yeah, that is true. If you really want to get into the derivations aspect, I mean, I feel as though the scientist in the Human Centipede is he's a scientist in the sense that he is conducting an experiment. Like, you know, he wants to learn if something is possible.
That's true. He does have a certain kind of wide-eyed kind of wonder at the world, doesn't he?
He's not ethical. I think you could. He certainly wouldn't be allowed to be a medical scientist.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't pass an ethics committee. No, I don't think so.
No, it's the kind of science you'd have to go to like an underground lab in North Korea to do.
He wouldn't be able to present his research at conference. Put it like that.
No, it wouldn't. Yeah. He'd be stuck with, like, you know, subreddits and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Presenting my research on creepypasta.org.
Yeah, he'd have to kind of, he'd have to sit at the table with the kind of, with the fruit fly researchers and, you know, things of that nature.
I like that in your taxonomy, the fruit fly guys are on a par with the human centipede.
this is based on. You won't remember this, I don't think, because I think you're probably a bit too young.
Mm-hmm.
But during the Sarah Palin election cycle, see, this is interesting. Yeah. Yeah, are you familiar with Sarah Palin?
No, I remember the Sarah Palin election cycle.
Because she's the MILF extraordinaire.
Yeah, I'm not 12.
No, I know. What? But you would have been about.
I was
about
a teenager
at the time,
when that
happened. Wouldn't you? How old were you in 2008?
That was That was like 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have been 15.
Oh, a big boy. A big, large boy.
I mean, that's definitely like an age where you remember your life. It's not an age where you're wise. I hasten to add.
I don't know why, but at the time, I got really, really fascinated by Sarah Palin. She became my special interest.
Yeah. And you're all about track, Bristol,
that's
Alaska.
Right. One of the things that Sarah Palin was obsessed with was this completely fascinating misunderstanding of why it's so, so useful to use fruit flies in genetic research. There is some reason that there is some reason it's something to do with I was going to say, please feel free to correct me on this, but really don't correct me on this. I know that I'm not getting it exactly right, but quite honestly, if you're listening to this show because you want information on genetic research, then I strongly, strongly suggest that you don't do that. I strongly suggest that.
Yeah, there's someone out there listening to the CRISPR podcast, hoping that they start talking about those about to die.
Yeah, exactly. But there's some reason why research done on fruit flies is very, very helpful for the development of various medicines and therapies. I think it's something to do with the way that fruit flies can be kind of bioidentical in some aspects to humans. I can't remember exactly what it is, but there's a good scientific reason for using fruit flies. And for some reason, because Sarah Palin was not a smart woman, she had formed the impression that the point of fruit fly research was to develop therapies to treat fruit flies. And she went around saying this, and she had an advisor who let her go around saying this. And so it entertains me to
showing that she was ahead of her time.
Ahead of her time, yeah.
Like, because Trump would get away with that.
Oh yeah.
He'd be like, have you seen it, folks? They're treating fruit flies. Okay, they're giving gay conversion therapy to the fruit flies. I say, why are we wasting resources on this? Is what the Democrats, they want to fund it.
Exactly. I think you're right about this bit, about this possibly being a reason why the plot is fucked. I think that there's a possibility that these guest writers were told about what had happened so far. They Something happened. They lost the script, so they got that fed back to them by yet another auntie who was trying to kind of remember it off the top of her head, and just wasn't given very good information. So we've got some more stuff about Domitian being a cackling villain. So he's trying to come between Titus and Berenike. So Titus is having some GF trouble here.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what,
he is. He's having a lot of trouble.
So
this is kind of the meat of the episode, I guess.
Kind of the meat of the episode. So what Domitian comes up with is that he's going to get the big CGI lion.
Yeah.
And he is going to make a replica of Jerusalem in the Flavian Amphitheater. And he is going to set up a kind of show execution of the lion. This is presumably a kind of foreshadowing of the Christians sacrificing the arena to the lions, right? I'm assuming this is what it's supposed to be in reference to.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, that's the semiotics.
Yeah, the background to this is that at the mother's meeting, the other guys suggested to Titus that maybe Domitian was behind the delays in the grain supply. As far as I can recall, because obviously as the viewer you have a broader sense of what's actually going on, that isn't implied by the show at any point.
No,
like there is a bit where where fucking Vespasian has a go at Domitian for fucking up the grain supply.
Yeah, but that's just sort of standard Felsen stuff.
Yeah,
but something,
and then Domitian's genuinely like, "It was my fault."
Something that I find interesting and peculiar is that, and I don't know what purpose this could possibly be. I genuinely don't.
Yeah.
But Berenike was the Jewish queen, right?
Yeah.
The inhabitants of Judea were the Jews, right?
Yeah.
It's very, very weird that they keep being referred to as the Judeans.
Well, I guess there were Jews who weren't from Judea.
Oh, so yeah, maybe absolutely. Judeans, but like, they definitely imply that there is a hostility there, certainly coming from Domitian and coming from various Romans as well, in the way that they say it. So I don't quite understand what the purpose is of suggesting that it's just the, you know, where that sort of where they happen to be from. So Domitian says, "Oh, you know, who lives in this city? I'll tell you, Judeans." And you think, if you're trying to make a kind of point about that this is supposed to be a kind of example of like specific kind of ethno-religious persecution on behalf of Domitian, wouldn't you be more specific and precise? I don't know. It just seems strange to me. But anyway,
it does sort of raise the question: what's the derivation of the word Judean?
Yeah. So what's the problem you got with in there? Domitian.
It's kind of like, and who lives in Jewland? The citizens of Jewland. That's right.
It's a really odd rhetorical device that they're using here. So I can't remember what's going on here with this the architect.
It's not entirely clear. So Domitian basically either he actually learns of a plot to kill Berenike, or he comes up with the idea of a plot to kill Berenike as an excuse to do this. I couldn't quite understand that from how bad the writing is. Either way, in response to the either real or imagined plot against Berenike, he has a bunch of the kind of ringleader Judeans rounded up from the camp that they're in outside Rome.
Yeah.
And put into this model of Jerusalem in the arena, which is going to be used for entertainment. Now, and then basically they're going to set it on fire, and then they're going to be eaten by the lion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this like weird subplot where like a guy who works at the arena says to like the lead Judean, he's like, "Well, if you charge at the lion, then it won't have to kill anyone else." And he's like, "But yeah, but why would I do that and kill myself?" And he's like, "Oh, because then I'll spare your family." Who this man is unclear. And then he's at the side of the arena.
He's called Corpo. But amazing. We don't know who he is. Because he doesn't say he doesn't say his own name. So like we need him like standing in the arena kind of muttering Corpo to himself.
Corpo. Yeah.
Corpo.
And so, yeah. He's there. And then basically the whole thing is a setup where Titus and Berenike are sat there, and he is blissfully unaware that they're about to put on a kind of ritual execution of a bunch of people that Berenike knows. Meanwhile,
a bunch of like her subjects and her people who she is like trying to kind of appeal to Titus on behalf of. So it's sort of supposed to be a kind of like Queen Esther situation here, which is sort of muddling of things together. We also have a really weird bit when she says to him, "The Romans hate foreign queens, Cleopatra, Candace of Kush."
Candace of Kush, the inventor of smoking a blunt.
That's right. The adventure of passing the duchy to the left-hand side.
That's right. Yeah. See, or as it would have been called then, Germania.
As far as I am aware, and again, I could be wrong with this one, but I'm pretty sure something is filtering back to me, is that Candace wasn't the name of a particular queen. It's a title. It's you're the Candace. I think that's right.
Oh, okay.
It's like people calling their kids Khaleesi.
Yeah.
Which is
didn't they also say Boudica?
They did say Boudica. Why is that there?
So, well, yeah, I mean, she wasn't really trying to be, was she?
No, she wasn't was at like war with Rome. Sort of tarting it up. And also, like, Boudica's not strictly a queen. She's a chieftain.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The Romans, they hate a chieftain.
They do hate a chieftain.
Doesn't fit into their bureaucratic system.
So there's this sort of embarrassing scene when kind of Berenike is like, Wait, is your brother going to execute my people? And you're just like, are you going to say something? Are you going to say something?
No, she thinks it's his idea, which is even funnier.
No, she thinks that he knew about it and didn't stop it. I don't think she thinks it's his idea.
Right. Okay. But anyway, she thinks that
there's
it,
a very funny
like...
scene where he's like looking at the ground like a kind of 6-year-old that's sort of been caught like doing kind of handprints on the wall.
Well, so we get this. We get that. Here's where it gets insane for me. This episode, right, is the fact that Domitian, right, during this, is portrayed as watching this unfold in the arena out of his bedroom window, but his bedroom window is also like a hospitality box at the arena. And he's like peering around, but he's like sort of peering around a column to like look at Titus and Berenike's reaction. He keeps going like, oh my god, I'm so
naughty. This is so brat of me.
Yeah.
This is so brat of me.
Oh my god. And then he just fucking looked. Oh no, oh my god, do you think he saw me? And then the twink is like, darling,
then
he totally saw you.
And then Hermes the twink just shows up saying, we're not saying that anymore. We're not saying that that's so brat. It's a little bit played, mate. We're not saying that anymore. What are we saying? Is that so cunt of me? Do we want to cunt this up a little? I feel like
Domitian is like a baby gay. He's trying to learn the words.
I feel like we should be cunting up the Circus Maximus.
He's like, oh, I want that. Oh no, is the Circus Maximus? Oh, is that more pussy? Sorry, I'm trying to understand.
At the moment, I feel like it's the Circus Minimus, and I want it to be like the Circus like Maximus. Just cunt it up, cunt it up. Just simply, simply cunt it up. God, we have a little bash at giving Tenax a backstory that feels important, right?
Oh yeah, because the guy tries to drown him in piss.
Yeah,
I would like to tell you, listener, that is an exaggeration or a misrepresentation of what happens in the show. But no, a man with the most insane accent I've ever heard in my life turns up and tries to drown Tenax in a vat of piss. Then he abruptly stops drowning him in piss and says,
I just want to bleed you for all the money you have.
I'm going to get you, Tenax. He's called Ursus, which means bear. So that's fun. Mm.
There you go.
So again, more German here, more German erotic activity here.
Oh yeah, also I forgot, great moment where Domitian goes like, but how am I ever going to get there? Meet me at the Ludus Bestius at 9 PM. And I'm just, once again, what is the Ludus Bestius?
A watch doesn't really go with this outfit, Daddy. How am I supposed to know when it's 9 PM? What, you want me to carry a sundial around with me? That's absurd.
And then meet me at the Ludus Twinkius at 10:30.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, you know what? I'm just going to skip the Ludus Bestius and just go straight to the Ludus Twinkius.
Yeah.
You got any meth?
Some people are saying that if you've got a stamp for the Ludus Bestius, you can get into the Ludus Twinkius without queuing, but that's...
I haven't washed my hand for a week. I literally just haven't... Don't touch this hand, because I have not washed this hand. they're sort of straying into kind of Antonio and Marcus, the public school kids there. Yeah, so Tenax, we get a little flashback where Tenax and Ursus are boys together. Tenax snakes Ursus in some way or the other and leaves him to burn. He gets clapped into chains and taken into slavery as a galley slave. And now he has come back to Rome and he's gonna rock Tenax's shit. But because it's episode four and this is the first we've heard of any of this, it's a bit like, well, I don't care. Tenax has done nothing so far to make it clear even a little bit what kind of guy he's meant to be. He's just a guy who just wanders. He just wanders around. He's not a villain. He's not a hero. He's not an antagonist. He's not a protagonist. He mills about. Yeah.
Why do we care? I certainly don't care. I don't care about Tenax. I don't care about fucking Scorpus. I couldn't be less interested in Scorpus.
Scorpus. I'm not happy about this offer, but the Scorpus will accept.
Yeah. I hate Scorpus.
Who do you hate the most? Do you hate Scorpus or do you hate Corpo the most? I'm not that keen on Corpo. I don't like his stupid haircut.
Yeah. Not keen on that. Not keen on Domitian.
No.
Domitian
at least seems to be having fun with it. He's the only one who seems to be having a good time.
Yeah, him and Consular Milf.
Yeah. But again, considering that she's supposed to be the kind of the villain of the piece, she's not doing anything very villainous apart from forcing an Italian to watch a hand job, which I suspect is, you know.
Yeah, the Italian hand job. There you go.
The Italian hand job. What does that involve? You put flour in your hands first. Well, you kind of slap it around.
You turn up in a Mini Cooper and then you wank him off.
Yeah. There are three old men in the front.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. What sort of Italian lemon party?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you like limoncello, if you like.
That is
the Italian lemon party.
Limoncello bunga bunga.
Is that it? Are we done?
Yeah. The only other thing I just want to bring this up really quickly is that there's a shot inside the kind of like the gambling den that Tenax runs, where like a man just wipes the name of some of the competitors off the board in a way that like clearly implies that it's a kind of primitive Roman dry wipe, and it's like, I'm sorry. What are we envisaging here? This is a kind of like a rustic whiteboard that they've got in the gambling den in fucking 79 AD. Is it? What?
Yeah.
How is this supposed to work?
Well, I mean, it's the only way it works is that you have to make sure that ink never dries on your board, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to wipe it off. Whoever's in charge of wiping it off has a kind of permanently stained hand.
Yeah. At this point, they may as well have had a scene that, like, when Corpus leaves the gold faction, they all, like, sign his toga with a Sharpie and someone draws, like, a big cock on the back. Like, yeah, good luck at the white faction, dickhead. We'll miss you.
Yeah. And that's
Levers AD 79.
Yeah, that's how you know which of the ones are more popular, because like there's this one guy who, when he went to the blue faction, all it said on his jersey were "Have a great summer." I'm sad, really sad. But he's a dickhead. So
yeah. At least it was a long summer. They added a whole extra month.
Good.
It was crazy being a Roman. Like, I mean, we think it's bad now with the clocks going forward and back, but sometimes they just stick a whole new month in.
I don't think it's bad with the clocks going forward and back. You know what? I'm willing to take a stand on this. I think it's fine. I ain't got a problem with it.
I hate it.
I ain't got a problem with it. I think it's good. In fact, I think it should happen more times a year.
Summertime all year round. What I don't like is the fact that they're like, oh, were you not enjoying the weather so far in autumn? Here's an idea. What if it was dark at 11 a.m.? And I'm like, no, thank you. No, I get up at 11 a.m. Yeah. The last thing I need is for it to already be dark.
Yeah.
You mad bastard.
Yeah, well, this is what happens when you allow a bug collector to set your chronological policies.
God, he was a bug collector as well, wasn't he? And a New Zealander.
Yeah. To add insult to injury.
Backwards. Yep. What if we changed the clocks? Did it surely confuse the tens people? I know that this is a terrible
It's not great. I expected more from you.
This is what I've discovered is I haven't spent...
was white Zimbabwean.
Yeah, I can't believe that this was taken away from me by the ZANU PF barbarians.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The thing, I've not immersed myself in Kiwi culture sufficiently to do the accent, but what I've discovered is it's more fun just to do a ridiculous parody New Zealand accent than it is to just do an Australian one, which is the other alternative.
That's the other option.
Yeah.
Okay.
So don't write in and say Kiwis don't sound like that. I know they don't, but you know what it's an impression of.
That's true.
There you go. That's my taxonomy.
That's true. There you go. I'm really pleased with that as an ending. I think that's I think that was really snappy.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for listening. This has been a Patreon one. So if you're listening to this, look, we've got your money. as have Amazon Prime, unfortunately, for those about to die.
Yeah.
Seriously though, thank you. Real talk. Thank you for being a subscriber. We appreciate it.
You're the real ones. And we'll be rejoined by Dr. Wyman next week.
Yeah. And next episode, we're going to give him some backstory. He's going to be attacked in the middle of the episode by a German man who will attempt to drown him in piss. But of course, the good Dr. Wyman will vanquish him easily due to his bulging muscles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, look. We'll see you very soon. I'm on tour in the UK. Please buy tickets to that.
Yeah.
And also Romecast.
Yeah.
Romecast season 2 remains available. You can listen to Romecast season 1 for free at the Romecast Patreon. And then if you want, you can download Romecast season 2 for $15. And also the first episode of Romecast season 2 was released as a free unlock on this Patreon. So if you want to check out the first episode of that for free, you can as well. So much free stuff and lots of good stuff from me and Phoebe and the good Dr. Wyman.
That's right.
Yeah. See you next week on the free feed. Bye.
Bye-bye.